Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jerome Lovato from the Secretary of State's office. Today is March 3rd, 2017. The time is 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time. This is the Risk Limiting Audit Participation Group. I hope everyone's having a good week so far. Just lost something. There it is. Sorry, I just had a technical. I'd like to publicly thank Steve Ward and Eddie Morgan, guys who work in our office, for helping organize and set up these meetings. So in person today, members of the participation group, we have myself, Jerome Lovato, Jesse Romero, the voting systems manager, Dwight Shellman, the county support manager, Danny Casillas, voting systems specialist at the state. We have Harvey Branscombe, Neil McBurnett, and I hear a lot of people on the call. So if you could just please identify yourself for those of us in the group, and then I'll mention who else is in the room. Who's on the phone?
Jerome, hi. This is Janice Voss Caudill. Greg's not with us today.
Okay.
Hi, Jerome. This is Pam Bacon.
Jerome, it's Todd Davidson from Arapaho.
Mike Pontera from Dominion.
And Crystal in Boulder, along with Rob Menzies.
Philip Stark from Berkeley.
We got Team Larimer County.
Thank you.
Garland and Brandy Ward in Washington County.
Hi, this is Ed Smith with Clear Ballot.
Thank you all for joining us online. And the rest of the group in the audience, we have Cody Swanson from Jefferson County, Kyle and Elaine from and Merlin from Douglas County, and Ben Rector, who's from the Secretary of State's office. So we'll just dive right into our agenda for today's meeting. I think just based off of the comments I received throughout the week, today's going to be more focused than the last meeting we had a couple of weeks ago. I just want to cover real briefly a review of the comments we received from a couple of weeks ago. All of the comments can be found on our RLA website. But one of the main issues was to have go through a workable procedure or outline. That was the by and large, the general feeling and thoughts I received throughout the last couple of weeks. So we'll do that. We'll focus more on that here in a few minutes. And another one was for the Secretary of State's office to serve as an audit coordinator or audit center, and just have that type of coordination effort from our office. We received comments from Boulder County, Denver, Larimer, Douglas, Logan, and Pitkin counties, and from John McCarthy, and several of the counties explained their batching process, which is very helpful. And if I'd like to continue to urge the counties that are listening that may not be a part of the participation group to continue to send us your processes, your ballot batch processes. Those are really helpful for us to really understand what you do at the county and help us to really focus our thinking and our ideas around the work you do and what we can do to help keep you in those same the things you're familiar with and not when procedures and rules are developed to not stray too far from what you currently do, because I don't think that would be very beneficial to you as the county. And another a lot of feedback I received was regarding this election, and we're going to get right into it here in a minute, which is to develop procedures for conducting countywide risk limiting audits for this year, and have that be the focus. I received a lot of feedback, not only from the counties, but other counties that aren't part of the participation group, and other individuals that are part of the participation group, to have a more narrow focus for going forward for these particular proceedings, to start with based off the assumption that we're going to audit a countywide contest or contest. So that's where I'd like to get started today in discussing the steps for conducting a risk limiting audit, like I said just a second ago, for a countywide contest. And so what I would like to do is I know some have submitted comments regarding an outline of a process that they would like to see, and their thoughts on that. And I'd like to kind of, based off of that and the pilot work we've done here at our office over the past several years, I'd like to start from the point of creating a ballot manifest with the understanding that others will have ideas about what happens before, but this is where I'd like to start with is get feedback from the group regarding creating a ballot manifest and the details involved in that, and from there moving on to the whole process of securing the ballots and maintaining the chain of custody, and then what happens during the after the scanning portion, after the tabulation. So just starting from creating a ballot manifest, we discussed this a little bit in our last meeting, and I'd like to express our thoughts, the state's thoughts that we have on this, and get feedback from the group. So when we've talked about creating a ballot manifest and what should go into it, with the idea that one place we have to start is that a ballot manifest have to be uniform throughout all 64 counties, since it looks more than likely that our office will serve as the audit coordinator or audit center. We would have to get the uniform output from the counties regarding this. And so one thing we've looked at is in identifying the ballot manifest is having the format be county number, batch number or ID, and the number of ballots in each batch. Are there any other thoughts on what else should be contained in that format of the ballot manifest? Neil, Merlin, will you mind handing the mic back to Neil?
And you have Great. To, Is that, to
turn it on there.
It sounds like it's on, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's on.
Oh, yes. Ron Rivest is looking for a call-in phone number. Hopefully somebody can get that to him. So for the manifest, in addition to getting the ballot count per county, per batch, we need some way to check the ballot styles or the ballot, the number of ballots per contest per county. So we've talked before about it being certainly with our current technology, if we don't have a CVR, impractical to get counts for each batch of how many ballots of each style for each contest there are. But SCORE, we're assuming, should be able to get us a report that says, here are the number of ballots cast. In other words, an independent check on that, because we can't just, we don't want to rely on the cast vote record report. So if we can get from SCORE a count of the number of ballots of each style and derive from that the number of ballots for each contest in each county, they're just countywide, not, so there would be two elements of the ballot manifest, one being the information on how many votes there are for each. And we can't get that from the count of, you know, from the number of votes in each contest, because we're not reporting undervotes and overvotes in all counties. That would be another way to essentially get the same information, but we need it one way or the other. Merlin wants to say something.
Excuse me. In the central scan process, 277 different styles in the last we can have in any given batch, we can have God knows how many different styles, how many different ballots of each style. There's no way that can be pulled off on a batch total. That's insanity from an operational perspective.
Will you pass it back to Dwight, please?
So I do, this is Dwight Shulman from the Secretary of State's office. I do think that ultimately a part of the auditing process should include ensuring that number of ballots cast by style is correct in a given election. I do agree with Merlin's comment that manually recording that, and if the voting system isn't capable of producing a report, manually recording that information at the time of tabulation is not doable, and the likely result of that process will be an error-laden report. And at least from our perspective at this point, we don't think the ballot style information is necessary in order to randomly select ballots for audit, because if there's a statewide contest on the ballot, then that will undoubtedly be one of the things we ballot or audit. We will know that the statewide contest is on the ballot in every single county of every single style, excluding property owner ballots. That's the one wild card, but that's manageable. That's something on the fringes. And if there is not a statewide ballot issue, which is likely this year, there will not be a statewide ballot issue probably, then that's why Jerome has said, let's focus on countywide audits. And again, to the extent that there's a countywide contest, we know that will be on every ballot within a given county, regardless of style, again, with the minor exception of property owner ballots.
Dwight, this is Janice. Take it one step further. In coordinated elections, sometimes you don't have a countywide question. So now you have multiple special districts. How are you thinking, or how should we address that? Would you use the largest territory, hoping it covers the most races?
Hi, Janice. This is Jerome. For today's discussion, just to get more closer to a working product, we're going to just assume that every county will have a countywide contest, understanding that that's probably not going to be the case. And so when it comes to if a county doesn't have a countywide contest, what to do, I'd like to just tab that until we actually – I'd like to just get a working procedure based off the assumption of having a countywide contest. And
I got it,
and I'm not trying to ignore your concern at all, because it's a very real concern, but just to move forward and getting a good base, a good baseline procedure for this meeting today.
No problem, Jerome. Keep it simple.
So
I completely agree with the goal, but I think that while we do that, we should be looking forward to how this will generalize to contests that span only part of a county or part of more than one county. So I don't want to lock us into some set of procedures that we can't, you know, later extend without having to go back to the drawing board completely.
Well, Philip, I don't mean to intend that this will lock us into any kind of procedure going forward, because here at our office, we understand that we have to be flexible. But just from the concerns that I've heard over the past couple of weeks, I just want to have a working product that at least something that we can build off of, add to, or take away from. But just have that understanding that we're going to have issues like special districts and cross-jurisdictional contests and things like that we'll have to address. But just for the purpose of today's meeting, I'd like to just focus on the assumption that we're going to have a countywide contest. Jennifer?
Just a quick comment on that. As has been stated already in this meeting, we know that contests with the smaller margins require more auditing, and in a coordinated, well, let me back up. I know when we tested this out last year in June, one of our small fire districts, because there were only 400 voters in that district, the margins were really small, and had we done a risk-limiting audit would have required us auditing all 400 ballots. So there is that likelihood and possibility in a coordinated election with lots of small special districts and school districts that you could have multiple races that may require audit of all of the ballots. So just something to think about when we're talking about procedure.
Well, just to keep us on point here, because it kind of seems like we're talking more in the future and not more for the present. Let's stay focused on the ballot manifest and what that should look like. If anybody has objection to what I stated earlier about the content of the ballot manifest, I'd like to hear your thoughts or any input on that. But I'd like to just stay focused for right now on what the ballot manifest should look like in the creation of that document, since that will have to be uniform throughout the state. And I'd like to just stay on point with that until we get this resolved and moving on to some of the other topics we have to discuss. But I'd like to just stay focused on this for right now, okay? Harvey, do you have your comment regarding the
definitely. Harvey Branska. Okay. So the scenario you just described is assuming a single-card ballot. And my understanding is if there's a two-card ballot, then that basically amounts to two different ballot styles. But they are not, they reflect completely different contests. And so if there were a two-card ballot used in an election with an RLA, we would need to know when we're sampling which card we are actually sampling, right? So in that case, you would want to know more than just the quantity of which card it was, unless you're willing to just keep looking at cards until you get to one that's the right card, which you can do. If you have a long list of samples, you just go and if half of them are on the wrong card, that's okay to drop them once you actually go look at them, but it's a waste of time to go look, right? If you know already which one is card one and which is card two, then you know which one you're sampling from. So, if I understand correctly, we're not going to see two-card ballots that have one style. But I'm not 100% sure about that. But that's what's been reported to me already from some Dominion counties.
And so somebody was trying to speak on the phone a second ago. Go ahead, whoever was trying. Sounded like it anyway.
It might have been me. Okay. So I agree with Harvey. I'll restate it in a slightly different way. So if a contest is on every piece of paper, then all we need to know is how many pieces of paper there are in the ballot manifest. But if the contest is only on some pieces of paper, even if it's on every ballot, then we need to know for each physical collection of ballots how many pieces of paper there are that have the contest on it if we want to sample it efficiently. So if there are A sides and B sides in a given batch, or A cards and B cards, it would be much more efficient to know how many A cards and how many B cards are in this bundle, how many A cards, how many B cards in that bundle, et cetera. So that if we only want to sample from the A cards, we can do that efficiently.
Thank you, Philip. Merlin?
Yeah, Jerome, I think your manifest description is probably as smart as we can get. As long as you keep a ballot as a ballot together, a contest may show up on card one or card two or even card three because of many different styles. I think it's important a ballot is kept together, and your manifest reflects a ballot. You pull the ballot and chase it from there.
Thank you, Merlin. Danny?
Yeah, I've looked at Arapahoe County's general election CVRs, and both cards have the same ballot style assigned to them, so you can't tell A or B by that method.
And I just, before we get a little too deep into this, is for the counties that are listening and those that are participating today, and I know it may be too far ahead in time to tell, but are any counties looking at having a two-page ballot for this year's election? What's the reality? Because I think two-page ballots are a concern in presidential elections and other general elections for sure. But for the scope of this year's election, how many counties and those who've even worked at counties see it as a realistic possibility that all of the counties or a good portion of the counties will even have a two-page ballot? So if you can, if you have that information, and you know for any kind of certainty, if you can just send that to me, to my email, and even if you know right now and want to chime in on that, that would be helpful. So we're not getting into trying to solve a problem that may not exist for this election. Dwight?
So just, this is Dwight Shellman again. Let me just reiterate something that I said at the prior meetings here. I feel very strongly that we need to do this as an iterative process. There, we will undoubtedly learn things in risk limiting audits on the ground that we didn't anticipate, that are different than we thought they would be. And so for that reason, Jerome's request to let's focus on what 2017 is going to look like, I think is really sage counsel, because what we want to do is implement this in 2017 in a way that all counties and the state can succeed at this endeavor. 2018 is going to bring new complexities that I think we will be better equipped to deal with in early 2018. So from that standpoint, I personally, and we have some larger counties with very active special districts here with us in the room, and I know there are some people on the phone as well. I personally would be very surprised if any county this year is going to be pushed to a two-card ballot or a multi-card ballot. I think everybody is going to be able to get their entire ballot on a single card. And then, Jerome, with respect to the ballot manifest, I think you said that the content that you were proposing was the batch number and the number of ballots within the batch.
And the county number, so the county ID number.
So we know the county. Mm-hmm. I know when we were talking about this informally before, we also thought they should include the tabulator number, whatever that is. I really don't think that's important.
Okay.
It maybe doesn't hurt, but I don't think that's really critical, because the ballot manifest, its sole intent is to provide the universe of data from which the state will randomly select the ballot. And I think the keep it simple principle on this, especially since at least some counties are going to have to do this manually, I really think that's really important. Let's minimize the information, which maximizes the chance that the information we get back is accurate.
Thank you, Dwight. And to touch on briefly on a point, which is the counties that have equipment that isn't able to produce a cast vote record. I'll just mention it now. I was going to mention it towards the end of the meeting, but while it was brought up and to kind of alleviate any concerns for the counties that have equipment that isn't able to produce a cast vote record. One assignment I'd like to assign to the group and the listening audience is to get your ideas and feedback about how to we would be able to conduct risk limiting audits for those counties that whose systems aren't able to produce a cast vote record. That's very important. It's an important piece of the procedures that we have to put together. I don't want to try to solve that problem today, but we need to solve the problem, and I'd like to tackle that in more detail in our next meeting on March 17th. But I just want to bring that up right now since I know that that may be discussed throughout this meeting today. But to put that on the table as an assignment for each of us to come up with ideas on how we can conduct a risk wing audit in those counties. And Merlin, did you have a comment?
I think it's important to, as a CPA, I think it's very important we start with the ballot and work backwards to the count vote, the cast vote record. Otherwise, you theoretically can have multiple batches or a single batch put in by multiple cast vote records. And so it's a theoretical thing that you should always be starting from the batch and working backwards. And what you're proposing provides a very simple vehicle to come back from the hard ballot back to cast vote record. It should on any system. And Dwight, I agree with virtually all what you just said.
Thank you, Merlin. Harvey.
Thanks, Harvey Branscombe. So I'm receiving from the ether a suggestion that it's a good idea to have to avoid numbers for counties, for example, because a typo could result in a major confusion. And what I think that is actually suggesting is that the batch numbers and so forth should be made as clear as possible and as non-mistakable as possible. So that it's unlikely that a confusion will be made. For example, though, the number, you could use the county name instead of the number, that's what the suggestion was, to avoid a typographical type of an error causing a problem. But we do want to make sure that there are no identical or duplicate batch numbers, and as much as possible, the batch number or the batch identity should identify where it's located, ideally, in case there's any chance of confusion, because there might be batch numbers in two different locations that would be the same, for example. So important not to have that happen. And if there could be uniformity around the state or move towards it, that would probably be better from the point of view of the audit itself.
Thank you, Harvey. And you bring up a good point, which is something we'll have to think about and actually we can even discuss right now, which is the batch ID, what that format should be, because if I know counties have the way they identify batches now, and is that something that the state should make uniform or leave up to the counties to do? I don't know, but I'd like to get input from the counties, especially on this topic. Dwight, Danny, do you have?
Yeah, I had a comment on the ballot manifest.
Okay.
The counties are probably going to put the batches into a bin.
If they, you know. Were you talking to the microphone?
I am.
There you go.
The counties are going to put the batches into a bin, so therefore having the bin number might be useful on the ballot manifest for the county use to know which bin to go looking first.
This is Janice out at Pickin. We assign our batch numbers based on what's scanned in the Dominion system. So the batch number correlates with what batch numbers assign out of Dominion. And then we mark outside the boxes what batch numbers the ranges are in the box. So I just wanted to share that.
This is Dwight. Thanks, Janice. I was just going to mention that. So to the extent the county is using a voting system that is capable of generating a ballot-level cast vote record, then we have to require the county to use the same batch numbering convention and the same batch number that the voting system is going to assign to that batch, because when we tell a county we've randomly selected ballot number 234 in batch 67, the county will need to use that information, number one, to retrieve the paper ballot, and then number two, to compare the markings on the paper ballot to the interpretation of those markings on the ballot level cast vote record. If a county is not using a voting system that is capable of generating a ballot level cast vote record, I guess my initial sense is that the county probably has more discretion on how to number their batches, as long as they create a clear map to where that piece of paper is stored in their records. I do think that we should require batch identifications to be numeric rather than alphabetical, just for purposes of manipulating data in spreadsheets. So those are my thoughts.
Thanks, Dwight.
So thanks, Dwight. I just, going backwards, Harvey and Merlin, your comments are well taken, but it's pretty much straightforward, provided for us as we go through the process. So for me, it doesn't make sense to create new concepts or name things differently. It's all pretty much straightforward in the process with Dominion.
This is Jennifer with Arapahoe. Just so that we're clear on the Dominion system, we have to pre-assign that range of batch numbers per each scanning station. And that's why we identify our ballot manifest is the station number and then the batch number, because we have to pre-assign those so that we don't have any overlap. Does that make sense?
We do the same thing, Jen. So it's all set up prior. I guess my point is we set this up prior. We know what we're working with, and it's identified through the process.
Yeah, this is Danny Casillas. The next version of the software will assign the batches, so you don't have to do that pre-assignment. So any batch could show up on any of your scanners. So a scanner might have batch 1, batch 3, batch 7, so you have to keep track of which batch is showing on the display.
Yeah, closer to your mouth.
Yeah, this is Mike from Dominion. I was just going to comment. Thanks, Danny. That's correct. So the next version, it'll be a unique tabulator ID. It'll be a batch ID associated with that tabulator, but you might have the same batch ID with a different tabulator. The differentiation will be the combination of the tabulator number and batch number. In the past, you folks are right, we had to do different batches across different ICCs, but that's no longer going to be a requirement. So you will still be required to write down the batch number that corresponds to the one you're doing on your check sheet, but you don't necessarily have to do that ahead of time.
Merlin here. Our ballot tracking system can identify straight through. Now, I would question whether there's a need for uniformity in the ballot format, as whatever a given county turns in, it becomes a matter of if the SOS pulls off certain records, the thing tie back to. For convenience, you may want that, but I don't see as a need to have a uniform numbering system.
Okay. Thank you, Merlin. And I think just to close the loop on this, it sounds like everybody's in agreement with having a uniform ballot manifest and some of the particular details like batch ID. It sounds like it is either a system dependent or dependent on the counties. And I think that's something that we can work with I don't see, just kind of thinking about it right now, how that would be a hang-up in the big scheme of things. And so I'd like to just close the loop on ballot manifest. And Dwight has a comment on this. So after Dwight makes his comment, we'll close the loop on ballot manifest and get to the next topic.
So my only comment directed to Merlin's remark about the need for uniformity. The issue from my standpoint is the Secretary of State's office needs to identify the ballots to be audited in up to 64 counties very quickly, like next day. And if that information is not in a uniform format, it makes it difficult to kind of automate that process by throwing a macro at a whole bunch of different spreadsheets, for example. But the bottom line is, I think the form that we develop can have drop-down lists for you to identify your county, for example, and to make it very, you know, a lot of that repetitive information, I think we can take it out by just being smart about how we design the form. But my sense is, and Danny and Jerome are more involved in working with the data we actually get from the counties than I am, but my sense is if we have to go and like manipulate all 64 county spreadsheets before we can work with them in unison, that's going to create a real time drag. So I'm not saying you're wrong, Merlin. I'm just saying there is a real countervailing interest here, and we just need to be sensitive to that.
Thank you, Dwight. And I'll get to the topic later, and that's in regard to RLA software. But I'll address, I'll provide an update closer to the end of this meeting regarding that. So the next topic then becomes...
Jerome, before you go on the next topic, when you started talking about the ballot manifest with the county batch number and count of ballots, we also talked about style. So am I going into too much specifics, or we're fine where we're at, and that will be a discussion later?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Jerome's got me trained.
I don't think so. So the next topic is chain of custody of ballots. We have to think about security, and I know the counties do that now. And so part of this is, do we want to provide specific guidance regarding ballot security and chain of custody, or let the counties secure the ballots as they do now? That's something that, I don't right now feel comfortable dictating one way or the other. I'd like to get feedback on what does this look like for ballot security and storage. So if anybody has thoughts on that, especially from the county level, if you could just go ahead and speak up here. And what I mean by that is I've been in a lot of counties, and most of the counties I've been to store their ballots in some type of container, a plastic container or metal container, and usually have a chain of custody log associated with that. And I've been to many counties at whose processes are very similar in that regard. And so I don't know if we should keep it that same way, or if there should be some uniform chain of custody log produced by our office that says this information has to be on each container. So Jennifer, what thoughts do you have on that?
I really don't think anybody would have an issue if you created some sort of log. We seal all of those plastic tubs once they're full and record that. So I'm guessing most counties have a similar process. That'd probably be a benign issue. And there's probably some merit in creating some standardization there.
This is Larimer County, and I appreciate that comment. And I agree that most instances were going to be similar, but I think that we still need a local level of chain of custody for that particular process for that particular county and size.
Thank you, Larimer.
Jerome, this is Janice, and I think we use an old form, chain of custody form, from the Secretary of State already. My only thought would be that you have smaller and larger counties, and as long as it's a generic form, they might have different processes opening and closing within each state. So, for example, somebody may receive and lock it up and send it to another room and then sig there and then opening and scanning. So I think different counties have different timelines on their processes. So just a generic form.
Okay.
Jerome, this is Crystal in Boulder. I would just add that, you know, there could be guidance around the parameters or the specific information that need to be captured. But I don't know that a form would work for everybody. For example, our county uses an electronic chain of custody, right? So for us, we already track that in electronic form, and then we have other forms that work for our processes. But we're happy to abide by the requirements of any information that has to be captured.
Thank you, Crystal. Dwight?
This is Dwight from the Secretary of State's office. I think this is one area that we should be very careful about dictating precisely what the counties must do, because their facilities and their personnel, you know, they just have different resources and so forth. I guess my thinking about this is we have a rule that requires counties to maintain documented chain of custody. And that rule says what must be on the chain of custody log. My recollection is date and time, seal number, event, meaning open to add more ballots, reseal, open to add more ballots, reseal. You need the seal number and you need the signatures of two differently affiliated election judges. Then in the past, before this was in the context of a risk limiting audit, we didn't really have an approved form of a chain of custody log. We had a recommended form. And that's because the rules say counties must use an approved form where we've issued one. And this has always been one of those areas where we just didn't feel comfortable telling each and every county precisely exactly what to do, other than saying you must maintain documented chain of custody and I think I just exhausted the microphone. Documented chain of custody consists of these elements. As long as you're complying with all those elements, I think we call that good. But the important thing from my standpoint here is one of the obligations of the audit board, somebody's going to go and retrieve a paper ballot for audit. Part of that process as kind of a predecessor step must include that audit board needs to verify that they are retrieving that ballot from a, for lack of better, situation in which they can verify documented chain of custody. So they just need to verify that they can trust that ballot, essentially. But other than that, my initial thought is we should not micromanage this particular process too much.
Thank you very much for that, Dwight.
Thank you, Dwight. I mean, some of us use cardboard boxes, some of us use steel boxes, some use plastic boxes, but we all have a chain of command, a chain of custody, and I think a recommended is a lot different than required. I think we're where we need to be right now.
Thank you, and I agree as well with the comments that were made. Harvey, do you have a comment here?
So yeah, I'm not recommend. I would say it'd be desirable perhaps to have more uniformity, but not required. And on the other hand, I think it's also desirable to have the chain of custody actually reflected up to the state, so that the public can see that there is a documentation of chain of custody. So that's perhaps a separate question, is how the chain of custody would be made apparent, or the quality of it would be made apparent to the public. And perhaps that, at a minimum, could be a voluntary way for the counties to actually upload some form of their proof of chain of custody.
And I think that might be more of a policy question, Dwight. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if we can answer that right now or say anything with any kind of certainty.
Yeah, this is Dwight. I do think to some extent it's a policy issue. From a practical standpoint, counties in any given election literally generate hundreds, perhaps thousands of pages of chain of custody logs, for a whole bunch of different parts of the process. I don't mind if counties want to upload all of that information to us in some format. It's just that when it's divorced from the context at the county from which it was created, I'm not sure I could make any sense of all of those documents. I would think that at a minimum, at some point here, and I'm probably getting ahead of ourselves here, Jerome, but at some point we're going to talk about the report that each county must file with us when they complete their audit. It seems to me to be more usable for, just as an example, I'm just throwing this out there, for an audit judge or the audit board to say, the Secretary of State told us to audit these 37 ballots. And the first of those 37, we confirmed that matched the cast vote record. And we also verified that the county maintained, you know, documented chain of custody of the original paper artifact, almost a checkbox situation. I'm just not sure we can require counties to upload all of those chain of custody logs, which are themselves election records, which they must retain for 25 months, and in many cases are physically attached to the bin. Mm-hmm. Boy, that just seems kind of a practical nightmare to coordinate.
Thank you, Dwight.
This is Janet.
Thank you, Dwight.
Just a question. What is the problem we're trying to solve by uploading all that?
Thank you, Janice.
I think Harvey was just making a suggestion Harvey as a transparency type item. Is that correct?
Can't hear Harvey.
Okay.
Hang on.
We only have one microphone in the audience, so we're playing hot potato with it for those
Sorry.
Listening.
This is Harvey. I was just saying that the chain of custody is a precursor to the audit. It's a necessary component, and if its evidence can be provided in some form to the public, it is desirable to do so, because without it, the audit lacks credibility. So it's important if we can find a way. I didn't want to propose a straw man, yes, all 10,000 documents should be uploaded to the website. What I'm saying is that possibly a randomly selected sample of them, or that we could find some practical way that's not arduous that would actually help to demonstrate, or if someone has actually come to look all this work is done without anyone looking at it. It's really unfortunate that huge amounts of time is spent actually signing these seal logs. And if they were actually accessible to be seen, they would actually provide serve the purpose for which they are intended. So this is a chance to think of some way to do it. I'm not saying it has to be done in the first year or whatever, but it's something to keep on the burner.
Thanks, Harvey, because we just thought we just do it. So I just was trying to figure out what problem to solve.
Okay. I think there's more credibility in having the 6 or 8 or 10 or however many different election post-election judges signing the document than there is in sending a document to the Secretary of State with a couple thousand others that doesn't get looked at.
Well said, Merlin.
Thank you, Merlin. And it seems like everyone is in agreement in the general sense of the state not dictating the chain of custody. As Dwight stated, we do have rules regarding that anyway. And so I think we can just call this item closed and leave it as is. As it is with every part of this process, when we actually do the audit, we're going to find things that work and don't work. And if this is an item that just isn't working and this goes for every part of this process, then we'll have to look at it after the election and going forward with the next round of rulemaking after this initial one is look at the procedures and revise them or remove them, whatever the case may be. So we do have some of that flexibility, and it's good to bring these items to the table for discussion and thinking about as we go forward and then actually conduct the audit later this year. So the next topic I'd like to discuss is when to provide your final cast vote record to the Secretary of State. I've seen some input on Neil sent an outline a couple of weeks ago, and one of his suggestions was to provide a preliminary cast vote record on election night, and I've seen others that I've talked to others where they have wanted to just commit to a cast vote record when all the ballots have been tabulated after the 8th day of the election, and so I'd like to get more feedback on when counties should submit their cast vote records to our office. Is there any benefit to submitting a cast vote record to us before all of the ballots have been tabulated? I personally don't see any benefit to that, but I'd like to just get input from the group on that.
This is Philip. So the crucial point is that the local elections officials need to commit to each set of CVRs before that set is subject to audit, just to make sure that, you know, nothing changes inadvertently during the course of the audit. So if we were contemplating an audit that took place in stages, say, with things cast in polling place, followed by things cast by mail, et cetera, then it might make sense for them to commit to those things, not all at the same time, so they could start auditing one set earlier. I don't think that's what's being contemplated for this November. So I see no advantage to doing it in stages. Moreover, whether the CVRs are reported to the Secretary of State's office or not, it might be nice for transparency and to have things in a central location, but the crucial point is that the auditors and any observers can confirm that the cast vote records that are used in the audit are those cast vote records that were totaled to get the results that are being audited.
Thank you. Phil, for the first time, I agree with you. This is Merlin.
I'll mark it in my calendar.
Mm-hmm.
This is Harvey. I'm not sure why Philip said there's no advantage to uploading the cast vote records centrally. I think there is a transparency advantage, and there's an advantage to providing them when they become available, as opposed to letting them sit around for a week and then providing them all at once. I think there actually is, and not for the purpose of attempting to audit early or have some portion of the election ready to be audited before all of the cast vote records are produced, but the cast vote records could be uploaded at any time, and earlier is better. I don't know why they wouldn't be.
This is Dwight from the Secretary of State's office. We are contemplating that we will act as a central reception point for all CVRs from all counties, just so that's clear. I do think that there is a serious potential disadvantage from doing these early, and it's something we're going to have to address at some point in these meetings, which is in Colorado, invariably, just because our elections tend to dissect counties into very small slivers sometimes, before a county uploads CVRs to us, I think we want that county to do an initial assessment as to whether any of those CVRs can be associated with individual voters. And for those of you on the phone who may not be familiar with us, with this, when Colorado, in general elections, for example, Colorado requires counties to report results out by precinct, and it may be, depending on how district lines fall in those precincts, a participating political subdivision just has one or two or three voters in a precinct that voted on the only ballot style containing that political subdivision's ballot content. The fact that that is possibly identifiable is not the fault of the county. It's kind of a natural consequence of the way the General Assembly requires counties to report their results. And I know I'm jumping way ahead, but my thought is I think the county should scrub their CVRs for identifiability before they upload to our office. And you don't know the full contours of identifiability until each and every vote has been cast in the election. So I think that the counties should upload once all votes have been counted and once any issues of associability or identifiability of a CVR have been identified and dealt with.
Dwight, this is Janice. I was going to bring that up, but I was afraid to. It was too much information. I thought Jerome was going to get after me. But in any event, I got another question. Did we not talk last week? I'm shifting this to 8 days after the election. Did we not talk last week that it would be better to wait until after the 8 days to have a CVR that was all-inclusive? And how I'm looking at it is more closely reflects what our abstract would be that we send to the Secretary of State or at the end of the election.
You're right, Janice. And please don't take – I hope that my last short answer to you – wasn't me telling you not to talk or ask questions.
I'm busting your chops.
what I would like to nail down is we will have to define a deadline for counties to submit their CVRs. So in the description and what you described, Dwight, if we're going to make that the case for the county to scrub their CVR before submitting to us, what is the deadline to have that finished before submitting to us? That's something we will have to nail down. So you have the ninth day after the election at 5 p.m.? Okay. I just want to get that confirmed. And just as a point to when from this outline, I'd like to do, just for those who are listening, is from this outline before the next meeting, I'll have a draft of procedures for everybody to look at and comment on. And so that's why I want to just kind of get things settled, as close to settled anyway as possible, for going forward. Harvey?
Yep, this is Harvey Pranscombe. So I'd like to respond to Dwight. And I completely, if there's anybody in Colorado who thinks that the ballot should be anonymous, it's me. And I think Dwight has proposed the wrong place to achieve that anonymity. We do not want to achieve the anonymity in the cast vote records. We want to achieve it in the ballots and everything, that including at the counties. We don't want to have non-anonymous ballots at the counties and only anonymous when they reach the Secretary of State. We can solve those. We can achieve that anonymity, maintain it at the counties for the paper ballots and any images of the paper ballots that are made and so forth. And we can hold back ballots to be counted late so that when you don't even have an identifiable cast vote record at all, because they're being created all at the same time, so that you have enough of each style so they're not identifiable. And yes, there's a specific case where there are only so many of a style in the entire county, and that has to be dealt with a different way. But we don't want to just protect the cast vote records. We want to protect the actual ballots and have the county procedures do that throughout the whole election process. And there are ways to do that.
You sort of addressed my question, and that is, what do you mean by scrub? If I've got one or two voters in a given style, then what am I supposed to do, throw them out? What do you mean by scrub?
This is Dwight again. So before I answer that question, Merlin, let me respond to Harvey. I do think that there are things counties can do to minimize these problems by making sure their district lines make sense in terms of precincts, in terms of other districts, and so forth. But there are confluences of circumstances that happen one time that, through no fault of anyone, exposes the manner in which a voter voted to the public if the CVR is released. And that's why clerks and recorders take an oath that says if they ever happen to come into that information, they will never disclose that. And now we're talking about something else. We're talking about a cast vote record that's going to be publicly available from our website. So I don't disagree with you in principle that counties should be very proactive to minimize those issues as much as possible in advance. But a lot of times they don't know who's going to participate until 57 or 60 days before the election. And at that point, it is absolutely against the law to redraw a precinct boundary or a district line. So they're stuck with it. And I just want to make sure that our process accommodates the full panoply of circumstances that can occur that are really difficult in good faith to anticipate. Talking to Merlin's point, in terms of scrubbing the CVR, if under criteria that we enunciate in a rule, it's determined that there is an identifiable CVR, I would anticipate that the CVR is a spreadsheet where every row is a separate ballot. I would anticipate that either the county clerk would delete the row, or probably better yet, clear the contents of the row. So you see the row is there, you just remove any information about what votes the voting system interpreted. Now, what that means is when you go to the bottom of the spreadsheet and you apply sums in each contest, the CVR record is not going to foot perfectly to ENR. But we always ought to be able to explain those discrepancies by saying this county removed X number of CVRs. We're missing really the information on votes in these particular ballots, and that's why the numbers don't exactly foot. But other than that, the numbers should match once you add back in property owner ballots, which of course is a whole different issue.
This is Jennifer from
Let me just vote to Jennifer and then Philip.
Just to add to what Dwight said, so I have some of those precincts in our county, and in six of those, there are only two voters, and they have a unique ballot style, and so it's really easy. We actually just roll those up into the next nearest precinct so that they still sum, everything still adds up at the bottom, and we just footnote it by saying the votes in precinct A have been rolled in with the totals for precinct B, and everything then adds up, and you keep that anonymity. So it's not that difficult.
Thank you, Jennifer. Philip?
Yeah, two things. So we're just thinking about November and doing countywide contests. Then one solution for this November would be simply to upload to the Secretary of State's office only the portion of the CVR that relates to the countywide contests and nothing on a smaller scale.
Yes.
And not to even attempt to audit those. Then there's no ballot style information basically contained in the voting patterns or the combination of contests that appear in a CVR. As a longer term way of dealing with this, there actually is a technical way to address it. It's in a paper called SOBA, which is something like Secrecy Preserving Observable Ballot Audit. I can't remember exactly what it was an acronym for, but the way it works is to separate out the different contests in a way that you're reporting CVRs sort of not for a ballot for a contest, not for all contests on the ballot. And there's a way to do this with some cryptographic commitment that lets you reassemble a ballot as you audit it to make sure that the CVR is correct, but doesn't allow pattern voting or something like that, or even the ballot style to de-anonymize people's votes. So looking forward to when we're auditing smaller contests and more complicated ballot styles, that's a potential technical fix.
So this is Neil, and I guess I'll basically agree with, I think it would be better in these cases. We're talking about really unusual, very small contests that cause these problems. And so rather than not getting the benefit of auditing most of the contests in a county, I would really want to include all the contests that we could and maybe just leave out the contests that we're talking about that have to either be audited some different way or, you know, we're just going to ignore for the time being. So, you know, if there's a medium-sized town in a county, you don't have this problem and you should be able to get the benefit of auditing it, even if you aren't auditing to a given risk limit as our proposals have suggested. So we don't have to kind of do extra work, but we should get all the benefit of pulling ballots, seeing on the ballot, oh my goodness, look, there's these other contests that people really do care about. Let's go ahead and look at them and get risk levels for them and get all the benefits and just leave out these very small number of really unusual contests. I'm glad that I see Jennifer nodding.
Thank you, everybody, for your input on this. So what I came away from is that by 5 p.m. on the ninth day after the election will be the deadline for counties to submit their ballot manifest and CVRs to our office. Like Philip restated, is that since we are working based off the assumption that we'll be auditing countywide contest, these other contests with very few voters is something that we can ignore for this this year's election and maybe even altogether going forward for any other RLA, but for sure for this year's election. And so the next piece, after ballot manifests have been created, ballots have been scanned, everything's been tabulated, and it comes to our office, is an idea we that just talking with several groups and receiving the comments and feedback regarding our office being the central figure for a central coordinator for the RLAs is then using RLA software to go through Dr. Stark's RLA comparison RLA algorithm to select the ballots and then send the information back to the county's audit boards and then conduct the audit. So while I'm talking about the software, I will just provide an update on where we're at with this software. I think everybody's familiar with Dr. Stark's tools that he has online. And so in the subgroup that will meet after this this meeting today, our office in conjunction with Neil McBurn have drafted some functional requirements for RLA software. And so we are working on developing software to use for this year's election. And I will provide a draft of these functional requirements when we have a good baseline of what these functional requirements are. Right now, it's very preliminary, and I just didn't feel comfortable posting those on our website. But when we have a good baseline of the functional requirements, I will post those. And so that would be the next step in the process, is to use the software to select the ballots and then send that back to the counties. And then from that point on, the county's audit board will retrieve the ballots right now I'm just talking about and I stated earlier counties that are able to produce a cast vote record, retrieve the selected ballots and then compare them to the cast vote record and even the ballot image produced by the system. And then after that point, creating a report to send to our office. And so is there any objection to what I stated before the send report to us? I think after having conducted several of these pilot audits, that piece has not changed regarding the selection and finding the selected ballots. Am I missing anything in that part of the process from anybody who's conducted these, or are there any questions about what I just described?
I think Ron, if I can ask a question.
I have a question.
Who is this?
Well, I'm Mark Lindemann. Okay. I don't know who else is talking.
Go ahead, Mark.
So my question, I'm not quite sure what you meant by comparing in that context. I would hope that the interpretation of the ballot would be done blind to the content of the CVR and recorded, committed to before the CVR is consulted. Is that consistent with how RLAs have been conducted in the pilots?
What do you mean by compare blind to
that? That the audit judges would record what they see on each ballot.
Okay.
And then as a separate step, that would be compared to the CVRs.
When we've conducted the audits here, Mark, what we've done is we've selected the ballot and read off the content of the ballot to a person who was reviewing, looking at the CVR and doing that comparison. We have not done one where someone selected a ballot and marked the content for that ballot in like a tally sheet or whatever, and then compared that to the CVR.
So this is Neil, and
One second, Neil. Can somebody, if that's your phone, will you just please mute your line? So does that answer your question, Mark?
It answers my question. I'm interested to hear what Neil says. It sounds like it is at least blind in the sense that the people who are interpreting the ballot aren't simultaneously looking at the CVR.
No,
but,
no.
The conversation.
Yeah, we haven't done that at all.
I pass off.
This is Philip. And usually the ballot is sort of held up and people in the room look at it and say, you know, for whom do you see a vote or votes? And then a couple of people are independently looking at the CVRs. Like when we were in Arapahoe, Neil and I were separately looking at our own laptops for the CVRs that had been committed to and looking it up and recording whether there was a discrepancy and if so, what the discrepancy was.
I think I
agree with you that for sort of record keeping, transparency, reproducibility, et cetera, it would be nice to have a log of how the people in the room interpreted each ballot that's pulled for audit.
Yeah. So this is Neil, and I did interpret the way that Jerome was describing it as blind. In other words, the person who's reading the ballot and interpreting it doesn't know what the answer is supposed to be. And that just is kind of general hygiene of how to do comparisons like that. That's how we always did counting ballots in Boulder. You know, you come to your own interpretation. I think as we move this to a multi-level, and especially as we prepare and try to get this ready for a statewide audit and just adding more transparency, it will benefit us, and especially as we try to audit multiple contests at once, it will be hugely beneficial to really cleanly separate the question of what does the ballot I'm looking at say from how does that compare to the cast vote record of record. And I say that because if there's a discrepancy, and we usually find some discrepancies, people who've done adjudication know that different people look at the same ballot and have a different opinion. And sometimes you'll pull the wrong ballot, even though it's the right style and so on. There will be various reasons for that. But when there's a discrepancy you really want, it can be confusing to do the data entry in a way that says, oh my goodness, this was, and you know, when you get into Phillips' forms, is this an overstatement of the margin or an understatement of the margin? Is it a double overstatement or understatement? You know, you get into how does this difference in the ballot compare to who won the race? And that's the sort of place where it's very helpful to first write it down and then usually with software, but you know, humans can do it too. You know, just say, oh, for this contest, it's a match, that's a match. This one's an overstatement, that's an understatement. Understatements mean, wow, you know, they won by an even wider margin than the original said. An overstatement means, wow, we're kind of in trouble. So it's just very useful to do it separately.
Thank you, Neil. Dwight?
Excuse me. This is Dwight again. I just want to follow up on that. It seems to me that there are a couple of ways of, so I'm just focusing on what Mark and Philip and Neil have said about there should be some record made of the audit board members' interpretation of the markings on the piece of paper before anyone else looks at the CVR. And my question is, how would you propose to accomplish that? I have a couple of ideas. One is that as part of this process, we are going to tell Arapahoe County, we want you to audit the following 15 ballots that were randomly selected in the countywide race, for example. And we will know what the available choices are in that Arapahoe County race. And so we could provide a form in advance that says, tell us how the audit board looking at the paper ballot interprets the markings on ballot number one that we selected for audit. And they would record that. You know, it's a vote for Joe Blow for county commissioner or Jane Doe for county commissioner as an example. And they can provide that information to us, you know, for each of the ballots that we ask them to audit. Alternatively, we could conduct that comparison in the, I think it's a blind way that we've done, where one team of audit judges is retrieving and examining the piece of paper, and a separate team of audit judges is independently verifying that the markings were accurately recorded in the CVR, and then just have them in their post-election audit report provide us with the image of the piece of paper that the human the first set of judges was examining. Would that be sufficient? I'm just, part of my concern here is, you know, we obviously have a mandate to implement a valid risk-limiting audit statewide, but I think we need to be very sensitive to the fact that these audits are going to be occurring at a time, typically, when county election officials and the election judges are exhausted, and I want them to provide us with all the work product that we legitimately need. I do not want to give them a lot of busy work to do if we don't need it. So that's my question. Thanks.
Jennifer?
Are we at a point we can make some suggestions?
Yeah. Okay.
So just given all of the dialogue that we just heard, well, I think, or what I envision is that, and it sounds to me like we're still going to be doing a manual sort of examination and almost a manual hand count like we've done in the past with past audits would be great, because the difficult part is having judges follow. That cast vote record is pretty complex to go in and make a match to. If there was a way to take that hand count and instead of entering it on a paper tally sheet like we do now, enter that electronically and have an electronic comparison against the cast vote record. And then if there's a discrepancy, then I think there's value in going to the ballot image, the electronic image, just to see if there was some problem with interpretation. But you had just mentioned, Jerome, looking at all three, and I wasn't sure if you meant like looking at all, you know, doing the paper ballot compared to the CVR, compared to the ballot image in every instance, or just looking at the ballot image, the electronic image, when there was a discrepancy between the hand count and the CVR? And can we do that in some sort of automated way?
Well, Jennifer, just real quick, what makes the most sense? Does it make sense to even look at the image unless there is a discrepancy? Because if it doesn't make sense, then maybe we don't make it a part of a rule only under circumstances of discrepancy. So I just want to pose that question to you, since you do.
So this is Philip. So there's no reason to look at the image except to perhaps understand why the software misinterpreted it, to understand the nature of the errors that the software makes. But for the purpose of the audit itself, the image is completely sideways. The image is just an electronic crutch that the system uses to come up with a cast vote record. And the issue is, does the cast vote record match a human reading of the actual paper ballot?
And just add, I think when we first started talking about the image, I think we saw that as a sort of a backup, that if the paper ballot we pulled wasn't matching the cast vote record, we would use the image as a way to also verify, assuming we haven't figured out some way to imprint a unique number, to verify that we had in fact pulled the correct ballot. But I would agree there's probably no reason to go back to that unless there's a discrepancy. And for efficiency, if you've had to go in and pull those images, I mean, it is time consuming because it's, you know, it's a time consuming process.
Thank yeah, you, I'll just support the notion that the image is it doesn't really give you from the perspective of the integrity of the audit, the image doesn't help. The image is pretty much the same as the cast vote record. It's a product that came out of the system that, you know, the tabulation and imaging system, and it can have bugs, it can be the wrong one, it can be doctored afterwards. The image is not something that provides any trust. And so what we want is to avoid make work, avoid extra work. And I certainly hope that we can get to a place where we have really easy to use software that optional, if counties find it useful, that you would kind of walk up, you'd say, here's the ballot you asked us to get. I'm going to start reading from the top of the ballot, and somebody on a screen who, again, doesn't see the cast vote record just says, oh, you said it was a vote for John, a vote for Mary, a vote for Mark, okay. And at the end of just entering that very quickly, and the image should essentially reflect exactly what you're looking at on the ballot, it can then say, wow, that's a match, congratulations, or are you sure you got the right ballot? Does it say, you know, that kind of thing.
Dwight, if you ask me to pull 15 ballots, that's one thing. But if you ask me to pull 500 ballots, that's another thing. Now, currently on the post-election audit, we're pulling 500 ballots, or 500 batches, five batches. And so we're actually looking at 500 ballots in that process. And I'm afraid if we're going after individual ballots, we can operationally add a lot of extra work.
Well, this is Phillips. So it's certainly more work to retrieve individual ballots. And I mean, in the couple of dozen audits that I've been involved in, retrieving a particular ballot, you know, takes on the order of a minute or two, sometimes three or four, depending on if the stacks of ballots are 500 ballots, it takes a long time to count into a stack to find ballot number 279. But if the batches aren't that large, it's, you know, that's kind of the order of magnitude of time that it takes. I see the primary function of the images in the audit to be if somebody drops a stack of ballots on the floor and the ballots aren't imprinted with numbers, you could try to go back to the images to get that stack back in the order in which it was scanned. That's going to be a nightmare if it happens no matter what, and it might be simpler to just take the efficiency hit in treating any ballots that were supposed to be selected from that batch as if they contained errors and expand the audit accordingly. But that's a logistical question that I think should be left to the local election official. You know, the in terms of software to help support this comparison, I can imagine that working in a number of different ways to make this easy. Oh, to address one previous question, there is no tally of the ballots that are selected. There is not an issue of counting how many votes there are for any particular candidate in a ballot level comparison audit. So we only need to be able to count from zero to one, like, you know, was there a vote for this person or not? In terms of software to support this, I can imagine that working in a number of ways. One might be that the local election official simply, you know, enters manually the votes that appear in the contest that are supposed to be under audit on that particular ballot into something like a spreadsheet. And that then gets compared by the Secretary of State's office to what the Secretary of State was told the CBR was for that ballot. So the comparison actually happens elsewhere in software or by human beings at the state level. Alternatively, both the CBR could be retrieved locally compared to the data entered by hand into something like a spreadsheet. That seems equally workable. The important thing is that there's some confirmation that the cast vote record that it's being compared, that the interpretation is being compared to, is the right cast vote record. The decision to escalate, I understand, is going to be determined by the state, not by the local election officials. If that's the case, have I got that wrong, Jerome? Is that
No, that's not. That's correct.
Okay, so then it might as well be that the comparison between the cast vote record and hand-entered manual reading of the ballot happened by the Secretary of State, since the Secretary of State needs that information to decide whether the audit needs to escalate. Anyway, I'll shut up.
Thank you, Philip. That's something that we do have to really consider here at our office as to the scope of the work there, and I don't have an answer for that, but we will get an answer because we have to. Harvey?
Yeah, Harvey Branscombe. So I feel it's very important for the counties to document the contents of the selected ballots in a format that's similar to the cast vote record, and I've been calling it the audit cast vote record, but that documentation will be provided to Secretary of State, and the county can subsequently do its own comparison with the machine presented cast vote record, and it may have some investigation of its own to do before the Secretary of State gets involved, but it's very important to have the documentation. And in most of the conventional audits that I've seen, there is documentation there are tick marks being made, there are documents being produced that actually contain the contents of the ballots on them, and often they don't happen to line up so that you can identify or specifically go back to a given ballot. But this would require that you go back to a given ballot, have the actual contents that have been interpreted, they're only being interpreted, not counting, but being interpreted on a document that can be provided to the Secretary of State. I think that's very important. The second part is about the images. So I've just heard a lot of dissing of the value of the images, other than for what happens when the ballots fall on the paper, on the floor. But in actual fact, from the public point of view, one of the great benefits of having the cast vote record and the images is that the public can eventually get access to the anonymous images and the anonymous cast vote records, and campaigns and members of the public can actually use those to help substantiate their confidence in the election. But that only works if we actually substantiate the quality of the images as a part of the audit. So I would strongly suggest that we actually do include the image in the evaluation of or the comparison of the paper to the image. And that would actually have to happen at the county, presumably not at the Secretary of State's office. So I'm actually suggesting that both there should be, for the purpose of the formal audit, a document produced that actually has on it the interpretation of the ballot that's been audited. And also the county checks to see whether there seems to be a problem between the image and the paper ballot that they're looking at. So that would be in preparation for the use of images and cast vote records for potentially interested parties to be determining which additional ballots they might like to have looked at as part of the audit. So that, in other words, substantiating the images would allow you to believe that the images are good enough, at least for people to identify individual other images or cast vote records that ought to be included in the audit at some point as a targeted audit unit, which is part of the proposal that we've been using nationwide as the best practices for audits. So I would hope that the images will be treated with a little bit more respect than what I'm hearing so far in this room.
Thank you, Harvey.
Jerome, can I, in response to Harvey's...
Yes.
Take it one step further, I guess. Don't answer the question, but I'm going to ask one. Cast vote record, it looks like a spreadsheet, right? So can you not massage it to only provide, when you review with your board, only provide those ballots that you are going to review? You pull the ballot, go back to your cast vote record, you massage the document to show only those ballots you will review, and you can always go back to what Harvey said, tick off and provide that document. The other comment I have is based on my initial thought in hearing what Phil and Neil had to say with the images, I respectfully disagree with you, Harvey, and agree with Neil and Phil.
And Janice, to answer your question, I know for Dominion's cast vote record, you could do a filter on there and select the ballots that are selected by our office. So that is one way you can accomplish that. That's just for your information. And it just looks like we have some disagreement on should looking at images be a part of the flow or in only certain circumstances we need to look at it. And I don't know what the correct path is for that, but maybe in the drafting of the rule in a few months that we can come to some kind of agreement on when to look at an image, if at all. And as in regards to documentation to the state, I'm by no means speaking as the final authority for the state in this matter, but just as an employee of the state who receives a lot of documentation, I'd like to receive less documentation. And then so anytime I hear, oh, we'll just send everything to the state, just having been here for 10 years, it makes me cringe because I'm like, that's more stuff to look at. Not discounting the stuff we look at, but I think we do have to be mindful that we as a state do have limited resources to not only store the information, but also human bodies to review the information and in a timely manner. And so that's something as a state employee and as someone who works in voting systems and who will be a major part of this process, we have to be considerate of and understanding that, you know, we too, our resources and we are limited to a certain extent of what we can receive and review and do it in a timely fashion. And so that's just something I want to throw out there as a representative of the state. Neil, you have a comment or question?
Oh, I was just going to say that there certainly are things that images are useful for, and certainly in quality control and other, you know, reasons to want to use that. I just didn't want to burden kind of what I think of as the central piece of this audit with needing to look at images also. It's not going to, this kind of process on the images isn't going to give me confidence like that in the future the images are valid. It'd certainly be good to do it from time to time to make sure that they don't look awful, but you're doing that as in reconciliation, I mean in adjudication anyway, so you already kind of know if the images are useful. So
thank you, Neil.
Phil, this is Janice again. I would agree with that, and I think Jen expressed also concern with the time that's consumed, but I agree it's important to go back to, and it's there to refer to.
Thank you. Thank you all for your feedback on this matter. So the last thing I want to cover, I think so far this meeting has been very productive. I personally feel like it's a lot more productive than the last meeting. is reporting to the state. We'll have to, as a state, I believe, have some kind of uniform template for reporting to us. So very similar for the counties that already submit things like mail ballot plans and security plans, very similar to those types of documents where we receive information from the counties and in a uniform fashion. So that's how I foresee this report being, is something that is created by our office, a template by our created by us, but what should be contained in the report? What results should be contained in this report? And as far as signatures, just one thing I see is just with our current post-election audit is having the canvas board members, in this case would be the audit board, and the county clerk signing off on it. But what should the content of the report be? So I'd like to just leave that, put that question out there to get feedback on.
Well, this is Neil, and I one of the benefits that I see of an audit is really surfacing in a way that is most helpful both to election administrators and the public and anybody else, you know, the losers, et cetera, just providing the evidence that the election did come out right. It isn't a matter of, gosh, the machines have been certified and they ought to get it right, and the people have done this before and they ought to get it right. But, you know, just providing that evidence, because there are certainly times that that's helpful in the public debate. So to me, I would love to see a system that has software that makes the production of the records of what came out of the audit trivial. And it would include all the ballots. It would say, here are the ones that we should have selected. You rolled the dice. This is what should have been selected. Here are the ones we did select. You can check that they're the right ones. If you're so inclined, here are the ballots we picked up. Here are the independent interpretations of those ballots. Here's how they were originally reported. It all matches. You know, it's just basically documenting all of those steps. And there are all kinds of ways to do that. I hope we end up with, and I don't see any, I've seen some early versions of software that do this kind of stuff and have written some myself. So I don't think it's going to be that hard to support it well, but to make sure that it's entirely transparent and provides great support.
And this is Harvey Branscombe. So I'd like to see and make sure that there is actually a human-generated report, particularly from the first few audits, but I think from all of the audits, which actually describe what took place, and would actually be useful for us to understand what divergence from the expectation actually happened, because there will be. I guarantee I've seen enough audits in Colorado to know there will be a digression from what somebody else was thinking was going to happen at the audit. And we're going to need to know that, because we're actually designing a brand new audit, so we're going to definitely want to know what actually happened. And software is not going to tell us what actually happened. It's going to tell us through the lens of what was supposed to happen. So that's why
You're here.
Okay. Neil seems to agree with me on that. So hopefully that will not be a totally cut and dry template that actually the counties just send in and say, well, here it is. Those are the numbers. There's left and right numbers like we've seen recently in audit reports. By the way, a few counties actually do provide a narrative, yeah, which is extremely helpful. And I'm one of the few people who actually reads all of those narratives and see what's actually going on. In fact, I've actually seen images recently being posted with the audit reports showing that there was a confusion about the interpretation. Very helpful.
And we do require that currently with our post-election audit, is that if there's a discrepancy for the counties to provide I think there is benefit to providing a field or section for the counties to tell us what actually happened during the audit.
Right.
So we can get really good feedback for the actual workflow process and things that they experienced, pluses or minuses, so that we can better refine our processes. So I think that is something that should go in the report, outside of just we looked at the ballot and the numbers matched and we signed off on it. I think just having a field that provides a little more explanation on it would be helpful for us as a whole.
Right. This is
Rome.
Yes. Who?
This is Crystal in Boulder.
Okay. Hey, Crystal.
I have a quick question on this size. So we're talking about doing a countywide contest, or at least for today's purposes. Would we be talking about counting 500 ballots and then documenting on a piece of paper the results for 500 ballots and then entering that data? for 500 ballots into electronic format so that you at the central location can validate that?
What do you mean by 500 ballots?
Well, I heard, you know, we talked about in a couple meetings ago, like maybe the number of ballots that you want to minimally count is 500. Would we be looking at doing something at level, or are we just talking about, you know, a smaller number of ballots, like 25 ballots? Because I'm just thinking from a time standpoint, would need to be considered.
We're not going to have, unlike previous audits, we're not going to have a set limit on number of ballots to audit. So that will just depend on when it comes to risk limiting audits, the risk limit and the smallest margin of the contest that's selected, and that will determine the number of ballots to audit. So unlike previous elections, we're not going to have that set number. Does that answer your question?
I was putting this into context and thinking if we were entering this data for, you know, 500 rows information and trying to show you the comparison on 500 ballots, that would take a bit more time.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I just piggyback on that question and then maybe you can answer that? When we pull a ballot, so when you select a ballot for us to pull an audit, are we just auditing a single contest on that ballot, or will we be auditing every contest on that ballot, or is it just depend? There could be several.
Right now, our thinking is I'll just say you just have one countywide contest for this election. Okay, so we would just select that contest, and I know and maybe I'm getting ahead of Neil and his comment that he has, but one thing that we could do as a result is we look at the contest that's selected, but then you could also, as just even confirmation, is look at the rest of the content on the ballot and compare that to the cast vote record, but not saying that we're auditing those other contests, but that just we're confirming that the ballot we're looking at matches the cast vote record, but okay. We're only auditing one contest.
And just to help Crystal, I know when we did this back in June, for state contests, the margins get closer as you get into smaller contests. We were only looking at 10 or 15 ballots. Countywide contests were somewhere in the range of 50 to 60 ballots, and it was only as we went down the chain that we started to move up into several hundred. So,
Real quick, Merlin, Neil had his hand up there.
I would really, really strongly support the notion of looking on the ballots that we choose at any contests that are still, in my view, are still of interest to the public. You know, if there's a judge contest on the ballot, whether the judge was retained, and there's a 50% margin in the contest, it's going to take a very small number of ballots to actually look at those judges and say, wow, looks like they really retain the judge. So it's a tiny amount of effort to do it, but it's just it makes sense to do it a couple of times. There will then be usually one contest that is mandatory to audit, really important, countywide, whatever it is that we've decided in the policy, that you will probably at the end only be looking at one contest on a whole bunch of ballots, if it turns out to be such a tight contest that there is a whole bunch to audit. And then in the middle, there will be those contests that everybody cares about to some degree, but they're not that tight. And so, you know, maybe you look at 10 or 20 and you're kind of like, oh, wow, now I'm more, I've gotten the confidence that I need, and we can start ignoring it. So if you look at the document that we put up on brief outline of steps for a risk limiting audit that we sent out, I think, 2, maybe 4 weeks ago, it defines those terms. There are mandatory contests where we actually want to hit a risk limit, and we're going to find several of those. It might be that there's a really close contest that goes swimmingly, but that there was, you know, fold mark on the ballot for some other contest that looked like it was kind of not very tight, but actually has a lot of errors in it. And so it might be that a different contest is actually the one that you have to do a lot of auditing on. But so we would have active contests, and we would just pay attention to all the active contests, but the number that we would select would be driven by whether they were mandatory or not. That's the proposal we have, and it tries to both provide evidence for all the contests without doing very much effort. We think that can be accomplished.
Real quick, just looking at the time, we'll wrap up with Merlin has a comment or a question, and if after him, if anyone online has a statement to anything that we just discussed, we'll get to you, and then I want to have a couple of items to wrap up before we dismiss here in about 10 minutes.
Okay. From a statistical perspective, you don't start to get statistical relevance until you're around 500 samples out of a universe. And so that would mean we would have to, for pulling on a ballot basis, we'd have to pull at least 500 ballots to get a high degree of certainty. I hope that everybody on the line read my treatise that I sent out or posted. But we have a very good system right now. And as a CPA, I've put together and worked on many, many audits. And the audit protocol that we have right now is quite solid. And the protocol for an audit includes everything from the internal controls and the software reviews and the LATs on through the whole process. And an audit protocol includes more than one little element such as this. And I fully agree if there's the statute itself says risk-limiting audit means an audit protocol that makes use of statistical methods and is designed to limit the acceptable levels of risk of certifying a preliminary election outcome that constitutes an incorrect answer. We do use statistical sampling, and if there is a potential weak point, only because I don't know how it's done, it comes in the selection process of the Secretary of State says, pull this batch or pull this ballot. And I fully agree with the manifest as you described, because it provides the vehicle to take to your statistician and pull the right batch or the right ballot. So from that perspective, I think that we cover so much of what's needed to meet the statute right now. I agree with the post-reporting that you suggested, and I worry that we create an animal that goes beyond the statute but doesn't buy us anything. And I referenced in my treatise an experience with an Arthur Anderson audit where they did a statistical sampling on cash.
Merlin. Yeah. We only have a few minutes left, and I'd like to get to if anybody on the phone.
Yeah, and let me finish one sentence here. They did statistical sampling on cash, but they neglected due to the bank reconciliation, and it was off by $1 million. And so I think that we have to be careful that we don't look at this as the end all. This is part of a larger piece.
Thank you. Is there anyone online who would like to has any questions or final comments before I get to my closing
remarks? This is Ron Revest.
Okay, go ahead, Ron.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, thanks. I just had a quick question. I just wanted to confirm my I think we're making a lot of progress here. It's great. I just wanted to confirm my understanding that the sampling will be done from the ballot manifest, so that the ballot manifest sort of is a declaration of all the pieces of paper we have, and that will be the universe from which we're drawing for each county.
Yes, that's correct.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I want to just thank you all for your input today. I want to just wrap up with a few things. Just a reminder about the assignment for next time is how to conduct a risk-limiting audit for counties that aren't able to produce cast vote records. People can please provide your input to on that assignment. And then for something that was brought up today that we haven't discussed and I'd like to get input on in the case of for the counties that can produce a cast vote record of what do we do if the ballots are out of order, if we don't have imprinting on the ballots, what do we do when the ballots become out of order? That's a scenario that will more than likely happen a time or two during this election. So what do we do about that? If you can provide your input on that question. And then for the counties, I was asked and somebody, and I don't remember exactly who, but what resources have you used in the past for previous audits? This question was asked in order to get a feel for what, like, as far as workload data goes. And so what resources have you used in the past for previous audits? If you can provide that information. And then for counties that have had any kind of success with imprinting ballots, if you've had any success, will you please send that information to me? I know of counties that have attempted to imprint ballots and haven't had much success, but if you've had success, if you could please send that documentation to me to better understand if this is something that we could use. And I asked last time, and I appreciate those who submitted information on how they batch ballots. If you can continue to send us that information for the counties as well. And I'd like to just thank everybody for adhering to our deadline of submitting comments to us. I really appreciate you all respecting that timeline. And so that's going to go forward. And this week was a little more hectic for me than most weeks, so I was a little late in getting the comments up on our website. I try to get them up by close of business on the Tuesday before our meetings. This week they were up on Thursday morning. So I apologize for the tardiness in that. But my goal is to get them up by Tuesday, as well as the participation notice on Tuesday before our Friday meetings. So I just want to cover those last few things. And I once again want to express my appreciation for you all and participating in our group and really getting something that's going to work for Colorado. I believe we're making pretty good progress on this, and we'll continue to do so. And I look forward to hearing from you all in a couple of weeks, and hope you have a good weekend.
Jerome, you had one more question you wanted answered, and how many counties will have a two-page ballot this coming odd year November election?
Right. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me of that, Janice. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.